I always love to hear those John Fogerty CCR bumpers, knowing that John Fogerty's a big coastie out there somewhere. Love to get him back on again sometime, actually. And I do have kind of a bad feeling about tonight. I'll tell you why. Anytime there's a warm night in October on a Saturday, it almost always spells trouble. That means the bars will be packed and costume contests and drinking things and bar fights. And when I was covering local news many years ago, that was always going to be a very festive night when temperatures were warm enough that there was no rain or, you know, snow or something where it kind of kept the festivities down a bit. There's going to be something locally, perhaps only, but always on a night like tonight, there's something big happening on a Saturday that's this warm, this close to Halloween. And in fact, I was driving from my home in the Twin Cities down to Chicago, where I am tonight on Coast to Coast AM. And thank you, Jeremy, and thank you, Bob Fukuda, and thank you, Trevor, and everybody that helped make this happen at the last second. I experienced a death in my family. A woman who I treasured, she was essentially my backup mom for many years and adored her. And Lois Asherman will be missed in our household and others. And she was very funny, and she asked that I officiate at her funeral tomorrow. So I'll be doing some of the graveside services tomorrow for my Auntie Lois. And I am practicing and fearing my Hebrew in the Kaddish, but I was driving down and I went past this area out in the middle of nowhere, and suddenly all I saw were cars, miles of cars and parking, everybody parking in a field. And I thought, uh-oh, wonder what this is about. And there it was, looming just out in the distance, one of those great haunted barns, you know, like a haunted hayride and all of those sort of annual festivities that happen at orchards or for the JCs or whatever. And this one looked like it was doing big business. And I just thought, okay, this is it. This is America's paranormal obsession at work. We'll talk with our guest in just a second, Deanna Kelly Saeed, in a moment on Coast to Coast. If you missed that first hour, if you're just tuning in now, go to the coasttocoastam.com website and sign up for Streamlink, which is now called Coast Insider. And this service gives you the chance to go back to listen to any show, archive any show. But this retirement heist book, I think we're going to have to get back to this sometime on Coast to Coast because it really is fascinating. But you can start by going back and listening to that first hour. And we had a lot of people who've been talking about Occupy Wall Street. And several people had encouraged me to go down and to participate and take a look at it. I'm still not quite certain what it's all about. I mean, other than it's a huge thing and it's got lots of energy. But there were so many different signs and so many different causes all under the same umbrella. And some people are talking specifically about reforms and other people are talking about revolution. And there's signs that say Karl Marx was right. And there's signs that say tear down the government and other signs that seem to take a different position. And they were all kind of mixed in together. So in the end, I'm not sure what's going to happen with this movement. But I do know I captured a couple of the best signs and I tweeted them out earlier this week. Deacon Punnett, at Deacon Punnett is my Twitter account, and I'm gonna retweet them during the show. So I'm gonna send you two of the best signs, photos that I took when I went to the local Occupy Wall Street movement headquarters. And I'll send those. I'll give you about like 30 minutes if you want to sign up. If you've got Twitter and you want to follow it, in about 30 minutes I will retweet those photos at Deacon Punnett. You're going to want to see those coming up a little bit later on this hour. And you're going to want to see what's lurking in the shadows coming up next. Our paranormal obsession continues on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. I've been pronouncing it Deanna Kelly Saeed all night. Am I close, Deanna?
Oh, that is perfect.
Okay. That's nice to start. It can only get worse from perfection, but I will endeavor to stay with it. Paranormal obsession, America's fascination with ghosts, hauntings, spooks, and spirits. Thank you for joining us. This is your first time on Coast.
It is my first time. I guess I'm a Coast to Coast virgin.
Well, there are too many of those out there. So we're doing our best to bring it. That's your second one tonight. Then I think I believe our first hour was two.
Oh, wow.
But you have a very interesting perspective in that you are now converted from having been raised within like a Methodist Baptist tradition into Islam, correct?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So tell me real quickly, how did that happen? Did you marry into Islam? Did you convert first as a Muslim and then find the perfect guy, or how'd that work?
I was actually a Muslim for many years before I married. I did not marry into the religion, and I was Christian Methodist, raised Southern Baptist. And as many people do, we all go through spiritual journeys, and mine sort of bumped into Islam. And it is quite a long story, but what I found is Islam is a religion that really values intellectualism in its pure theological state. It values intellectualism, and you have the heart and the mind bone are connected, and I found that to be very intriguing.
Well, I love the fact that you then can come at this from a couple of different perspectives. So let's start by asking, what is the Islamic, generally speaking, if something could be boiled down to essentials, and I know that, you know, there are many different disparate views in different traditions, but what is the central view of Islam toward what we would call ghosts and spirits and the like?
Well, the textual, the theological view is that when we die, we go to a place called Barzakh, which is an intermediary zone between this life and the life after Judgment Day. It's not necessarily purgatory, but it's a holding pen, so to speak. And they believe once you go there, you can't come back. So the concept of ghost is not accepted at the theological level, although it may exist in folklore. But what Muslims do insist upon is the concept of the jinn. And the jinn are considered to be interdimensional beings with free will, meaning they can be Muslim or Christian or Jewish or whatever religion they choose to be. And most Muslims will attribute any type of paranormal activity from crypto to UFO to ghostly ramblings to the jinn.
So they would say we're misinterpreting a ghostly experience, and we are instead experiencing the jinn. And the jinn are a separate kind of species?
Yes, they are. In fact, they are considered to predate humanity in their existence. And, I think Islam is very interesting in the sense that they recognize this interdimensional being, because it's really one of the few, if only, monotheistic religions that embrace this at this level. You have different views among Christians about these things. But most Muslims will readily accept that there is something called the jinn. They may not agree exactly on what it is or how it is experienced, but even in Islamic law and Islamic literature, these beings exist. There's no question about it, which is quite fascinating to me.
So the jinn existed before the garden, if you will. Is there a creation story for the jinn?
Not that I'm aware of. They have always been around, at least in the canon, in Islamic canon. There may be folklore outside of the Islamic canon that it attributes.
Right.
But in the Islamic canon, they've been around before humanity. They're not angels, because angels are considered to be agents of God, and they do not have free will. They're just essentially good and harmonious. But jinn are not. They do have the ability to make decisions on their own, and any activity, paranormal activity experienced by some Muslims, they consider it to be the naughty jinn, because the good jinn, the obedient jinn, would never interfere with the human realm. At least that's the assumption.
It's from jinn that we get genie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and our understanding of, even in the TV show I Dream of Genie, was that there was good genies, like the Barbara Eden character,
yeah.
And then there was the evil jinn, and that was a recurring character also that wreaked havoc in the life of Tony. I suddenly can't remember the character in I Dream of Genie. And so that's where, I think that's where maybe a lot of us kind of come to this, is from that understanding. What is the best example in Islam, if somebody were to be talking about the jinn, and they were going to say, oh, well, you know the story of... What's like the classic story that's told that helps explain the role of the jinn in Muslim society?
you know, I don't know if there's exactly a classic story, but I will say that the gin are not considered to be hot blondes in a bottle, unfortunately.
Right.
But there's this feeling that gin can harm you, they can hurt you, and do real harm that can disrupt your life. And that's one thing that's quite different than the contemporary Western take on ghosts, where they're just something that's often experienced, with the exception of perhaps malicious or demonic hauntings. But ghosts are just something that's experienced. But in Islamic cultures, the jinn are actually feared because they're afraid that the jinn may actually do something incredibly harmful, even possess. So I would say that's one of the biggest differences in the way we conceptualize paranormal activity between the two cultures.
I'm talking with Diana Kelly Said. The book is Paranormal Obsession, America's Fascination with Ghosts, Hauntings, Spooks, and Spirits. And I want to get, I'll get back to more about the spooks and the spirits in just a second, but we're kind of teasing out a Muslim perspective as well as the traditional sort of American Judeo-Christian perspective on ghosts as the discussion goes. If I were to say, you know, I was the reason why I brought up the what would be a classic jinn story is I think there was a bunch of classic American ghost stories. Mm-hmm. So there would be, you know, there would be the haunted ships. There would be the stories of a headless horseman. There's the, you know, these stories that if you were going to tell a ghost story, there's probably a short list of about 20 really great American, sort of distinctly American ghost stories. But you're saying that in Islam, maybe not so much true for a classic jinn story that almost everybody in Islam would know.
Yeah, that's, you bring up a really good point. As far as I know, there's not a classic jinn story that will translate among all the different Muslim cultures, because there's so many different cultures in Islam. I mean, Arabs are only 17% of Muslims. You have South Asians and Africans and even people in Europe. So as far as you know, there's really not. And that's very, you know, I've never thought about that before. But again, when you go to certain areas where people may not have high levels of literacy and access to health care, people who fall ill are sometimes be thought of as having a jinn problem.
Okay, that they could be besotted by bad jinn, or a jinn with evil intent.
A jinn with evil intent, or someone who has instigated black magic against them with the help of the jinn.
So let's talk about magic then within Islam, because within generally, again, talking about generalizations, within kind of the Judeo-Christian understanding of magic, there's this deep tension. I mean, there's some things like, you know, the magi that come at the birth of Christ, which obviously were kind of connected in an ancient understanding of magic, not quite what we think of today. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, all these other purges of witchcraft and other things that happen, and a fear of witches. Is there the same thing in Islam? Do they have the same understanding of being both attracted to the stories of witchcraft and repelled by it at the same time?
In Islam, in certain Muslim cultures, as in any traditional culture that's developing in a sense, black magic or magic itself still resonates. Even in parts of Africa that are not Muslim areas, magic has a huge following. There's cottage industries around both black magic and white magic. And although Islam expressively forbids the use of both, if you go to places like Egypt, for example, magic is still used among, or thought to be used among, traditional healers, like in the Zar ceremonies, which are public healing ceremonies where people go to a black magic healer or a white magic healer to get rid of certain afflictions, or women will go to the Zar to become fertile. So there's actually a social meaning to the concept of magic in certain parts of the Muslim world, and it carries a lot of weight. People will actually put certain Quranic verses around their home to dispel the evil eye, to dispel the jinn. And this is interesting because it's, even though you may find this happening among people who are considered to be very traditional, or village people or whatever, you also see this practice sometimes among people who are highly educated.
You know, we say Gesundheit, or God bless you, at times when people are sneezing because of this kind of passed down if only by implication, this belief that somehow when we are at our most vulnerable while sneezing, that some evil spirit could leap into our body. And that's why you say that at that moment to protect that person. Is there a Muslim equivalent of God bless you or Gesundheit at moments?
People will say Alhamdulillah, which is praise be to God.
Yes. And that too, and the belief that you are being protected at a moment like that of vulnerability. Isn't that funny?
It is
so
funny.
That crosses cultures like that. So there's this thought now. And if something were to jump into your body while sneezing in Islam, would it be a jinn, or would it be a demonic spirit?
Oh my goodness, I don't know.
One's ever asked you that question before.
No.
You're not responsible for the answer. But that's why I'm curious, because we have, and again, we have sort of this ambiguous understanding of what happens if you don't say God bless you.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
it's a little bit harder for the jinn to jump into a body than forgetting to say Alhamdulillah after you sneeze. But yeah, people would probably assume it's a jinn.
Okay. Yeah. And that if you had a jinn, if you were besotted by some evil jinn and your health was declining, is there an exorcism available?
Yes. Cottage industry exists throughout the Muslim world of people who claim to be able to perform exorcisms. Normally, they are considered to be very religious people, although certainly not all religious people believe that jinn can possess a body. From a purely theological point of view, I think the agreement is that they cannot. But from a local cultural folklore point of view, they are believed to be able to do that. And the exorcisms are not dissimilar from what we see here in the West in terms of the religious rhetoric used and that type of thing. And some of the symptoms of jinn possession are also the same as what is considered to be demonic possession.
We're talking about paranormal obsession, America's fascination with ghosts and hauntings and spooks and spirits. Deanna Kelly Said, you lived for a period of time in the Middle East, didn't you?
I have. I've lived and traveled throughout the Muslim world. Right. I lived in the Kingdom of Bahrain, but I've traveled through Sudan, Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Central Asia.
Are there haunted houses in the Islamic world?
Yeah, there are places considered to be haunted. They're considered to be haunted by the jinn, not by ghosts or something like that. But certainly, yeah.
Okay, and is it also a cottage entertainment industry in the Islamic world where you might pay to go experience a house that is haunted by a jinn?
Not yet, but as more and more of these shows are broadcast to the Muslim world, we may actually see that. No, people are really afraid of it. They try to run away from it. They don't even like to talk about it. In some cases, people don't even like to bring it up or to say the word jinn because they feel it will literally call them forward. However, I do know that there is a ghost hunting team in Afghanistan, of all places. They were applying for TAPS family status at one point.
Interesting. I have a lot of friends who are Muslim or who have spent a lot of time in like Saudi Arabia and other Muslim countries, and I know for a fact there are a lot of people who are Muslim who are willing to say jinn, but usually they mean that in terms of gin and tonic, and that's after only all the shades have been drawn and they know that nobody else is around.
Well, that's the safe kind of gin, I guess.
Yeah, that's the gin that they say, they'll take that on ice.
Yeah, spirits one way or another.
Yeah, exactly. Now, whether they're officially recognized or not. And paranormal obsession, you make a very interesting claim. So you don't just talk about the idea that there are ghosts and that there are spirits or spooks. It's not just that this could be happening, but also you talk about the phenomenon around the phenomenon. What is distinct about the American style, the American way of understanding why these things are happening? And I thought that was a really, really cool claim that you get into.
I think that what has made the paranormal and the supernatural so distinct in America is the fact that there's always been a public culture media component to it. From the 1850s, when spiritualism came to prominence. Now, obviously, paranormal and supernatural experiences have been around forever, and they've always resonated with people. In fact, shamanism was really literally based on people people's ability to communicate with the unseen, and these were religious leaders and healers. So there's always been a very important role that the paranormal has played in all societies. But America really turned it into a public, paid part of pop culture. And what I wanted to look at was why. You know, why are all these shows like Ghost Hunters and Paranormal State and Ghost Adventures becoming such a phenomenon, you know, becoming something that resonates all over the world? And you see other types of reality TV programming,
right?
But you don't see people emulating that. You don't see Jersey Club shores popping up around the world. I mean,
not yet.
Odd,
anyway,
right?
Hang on a second. Yeah, I have a feel Snooki's going to haunt us for generations. But we'll get back to our paranormal obsession and Deanna's experiences with the other world next on Coast to Coast. Okay, so I'm just about to tweet out a couple of pictures from my visit to Occupy Wall Street, Minnesota edition, which I went to earlier this week. I'll tweet those out in just a second at Deacon Punnett if you want to sign up for these. I did it earlier in the week too, and I love to do that. So I'd love to keep in touch with you during the week about what's coming up on Coast and kind of generally what's on my mind. And then I love to respond back to people and read your comments too. Paranormal Obsession, America's Fascination with Ghosts and Hauntings and Spooks and Spirits. Coming up next week, we're going to revisit a topic that George Norrie did a couple of years ago. But I think it's fascinating. We're going to have some very fresh perspectives on it next Saturday night, so Halloween weekend. And it's going to be about the paranormal experiences of police officers, the strange and unexplained things that happen to officers on patrol. And we'll have three of those officers with us, as well as the author of the book. That's next Saturday night on Halloween weekend on Coast to Coast. And looking forward to exploring why it is that Deanna Kelly Said thinks America is obsessed with the paranormal, what it says about us, and what it says about her, that she experienced these too. Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Well, Maynard and Van and Roger and Craig and Glenn and Mish the Bish, thanks for signing up to follow at Deacon Punnett. Same thing with Deanna Kelly Said. I noticed you just signed up too. Thank you.
Oh, I did.
Hope you like those photos.
Great.
Okay. So you too have had a paranormal obsession, as well as writing about it. You kind of got into this because of the TV shows that were covering ghosts in America, correct?
I did. You know, like many people, I have had experiences all my life, off and on. But it never occurred to me to do ghost hunting until I saw Ghost Hunters.
And Ghost Hunters spoke to you why?
That's a good question. I still don't know why it spoke to me. I mean, you know, gosh, I never thought that two spirit plumbers would be an inspiration to me. And I talk a little bit about that in the book, but I think it was an amazing way to experience the world. And I had just come back from living abroad. It was 2008. You know, it was right before an election year, so people were really thinking about what it means to be an American. And I came back to America after living abroad for a while, and this became a great way for me to reengage my American identity.
Okay, and what an interesting approach to your American identity through the pursuit of messages from the dead. And in particular, from that battleship, right? Isn't that the one that you kind of did your first ghost hunting expedition on?
Well, it wasn't the first one that I did, but I'm with a team that launched that site on Ghost Hunters in season two, the USS Battleship North Carolina. And I've had some of my most profound experiences on that ship.
Okay. And and going on that expedition, you had a bona fide encounter. Can you talk about that?
I've had a couple. I think one of the first really, really cool cold spots I've ever felt was on that ship. It was very, very viscous. And if anyone's ever experienced a cold spot that's truly paranormal, it's almost something you can rub your fingers through in a sense. It's not just a waft of air going by. It's something that's thick and it's as if you could pull it from the air itself. And I experienced that on the ship. But one of the neatest experiences I've ever had was with a team called Adventures Myth, AdventuresMyth.com. They were investigating with us on the ship, and they said, just kill all your equipment. You know, we're just going to go for an experience. We're not going to worry about getting evidence. Just kill everything. And as soon as we killed all of our gadgets, we immediately started to hear things walking around in the room next to us. And it got louder, and it was direct response. And when I tried, a couple times I tried to turn my digital audio recorder on and hide it. But whenever I did that, the activity stopped. So it seemed to know, and we were trying to record it, trying to capture it. But when we killed all of our stuff, we literally could hear something walking towards us and walking around. And that was a very odd experience because you're completely in the dark and we're sitting on the floor and there's nowhere to go. If something like runs up to you, you're kind of, you know, you're kind of trapped. And
how about that? So as you were, as you felt it too, other people were there having the same experience that you were having.
Yeah.
So what does that tell you then? Was knowing your Muslim perspective versus your American upbringing, were those jinn? Or were those ghosts?
I don't think they were jinn. I think something, you know, I don't know what was going on, but something intelligent was certainly there. And one thing I have come to realize is the way that Muslims talk about jinn in the common everyday sense doesn't really explain everything that's happening in terms of paranormal activity, because so many people have experiences with very kind spirits of family members whom they see and sense and who seem to hang around and in some cases do kind things, you know, to the people they love. They come to say goodbye, and this certainly can't be a jinn. Or if it is a jinn, then the jinn are not all naughty. Some of them are quite nice and friendly and helpful.
Some of them are blonde and live in bottles?
We hope so, right? That would make it all worthwhile.
I don't know. But that's where... Again, it comes down to maybe just our cultural lens will help, you know, will obviously determine what it is that we think we are seeing or feeling anyway. What did you feel during those moments? If you had to if you had to think back on that experience, what was the moment like you felt? Obviously not threatened terribly. Did you feel like somebody was trying to speak to you?
I felt uncomfortable, and not in the sense of being afraid. I wasn't afraid. But again, we were sitting on the floor, and we had one room to one side and then another hallway, and we were hearing things come from the hallway and from the room. So we were sort of cornered. And I remember thinking, I can't really believe this is happening. You know, this is almost like a movie. It was that obvious. And I was uncomfortable because I had never experienced something like that before. And I think the discomfort came not from fear, but from thinking, oh my God, you know, everything I know about the world, I have to question, because I know there's no one in that room, but as sure as day, I'm hearing hard-soled boots walk towards me. So it was almost a worldview, a discomfort coming from the fact you know you're going to have to alter your worldview because of this experience.
And so how did it alter your worldview?
I realize that the world is so complex and wonderfully complicated and fascinating that it gives me hope in a sense. And I think many people who have adopted this ghost hunting thing, they're looking for a way to transcend the mundaneness of everyday life. And they're also looking for an excuse to ask really big questions that institutionalized religion, including Islam, is no longer asking. And doing this ghost hunting thing, it gives us not just a cool experience, but it provides a new language and a new way to approach things like life after death and, you know, the divine and metaphysical experience in a way that is that connects us not only to the metaphysical but also to pop culture.
Yeah, I think that is an interesting aspect of the American ghost experience that may be different. Well, you've been around the world more, but from what I've experienced in my limited travels, you know, just even starting from a very early age, you know, if we just go back to Scooby-Doo, where are you cartoons? And there was this acceptance of ghosts in a non-occult sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there was in a very non-threatening, this isn't about religion. This is about almost about science, almost the it's really been the paranormal scientific investigation that has highlighted the American experience with things like Scooby-Doo or with other, you know, early ghost movies, where it was about people, you know, approaching it from an almost academic or intellectual standpoint and really not focusing on trying to settle any great theological questions about what are ghosts versus what are spirits, what is the soul, etc.
You're right. You bring up a really good point that in many ways what America has done is institutionalize the study of paranormal phenomena, whether it's psychical research, parapsychology, or ghosts, or consciousness, or whatever. But even in that, you know, today we see people going out and they have a K2 meter and all this equipment, and they say we're doing science. But even they're appropriating that term to mean something very different than real academic science. They're trying to use this term science to, in a sense, make their hobby or avocation seem legitimate. But what I believe we're really trying to do, and science itself tries to do this, is ask the big universal questions with a language that isn't necessarily related to God, but very much so. I mean, we're putting God in this science-shaped box, are we not? Or trying to put what we believe to be the source of the universe in a science-shaped box. It ultimately goes back to trying to find these answers.
Well, it speaks to the classic conundrum of science is, mm-hmm. you know, if we can't measure it, does it not, then by definition, it can't exist.
Exactly.
You know, if it's scientists had, they have to be able to see it, touch it, feel it, be able to in some way be able to study it. And if they can't, then it doesn't exist. But that's not the human experience. The human experience, regardless of whether or not we can measure it or touch it, we sense things all the time that some scientists would immediately dismiss and just say it's just in your head, it's just a trick of the light, it's whatever. But then there are other scientists who say, well, those are just things we don't understand yet, like at one point, quantum physics.
Yes.
You know, and someday we may understand what's happening, we just don't yet. But in the end, eventually it will be science. It's just not science yet.
I agree. And I think one thing that we're doing now as a society is we're really questioning, whether we know it or not, we're questioning the condition of knowledge, whether it be religious knowledge or scientific knowledge. And things like ghost hunting and Bigfoot hunting, what we're really doing is saying, you know what, there's truths that lie outside of what is accepted. There's real, tangible truths that science just is not accounting for, and we're almost allowing these truths to speak in what we're doing. It's very powerful, in a sense, to be able to allow the dead to speak. I mean, there is something quite profound, both possibly scientifically and metaphysically, in being able to provide what we feel is evidence of something like that.
The word theology, as I think I've probably gone into before on Coast to Coast, if you really break it down, you know, theos, logia, if we look at it in terms of the logos and words and God, is we could look at the word theology and just say it really just means words about God. We sometimes use ology as a way of saying study of God, but really theology is just words about God. We're just saying things about God. We think this is what it is. We talk about it. And I think that's where sometimes science mistakes itself for being able to be definitive, where sometimes really it's just informative. I mean, there's some things you can study, like geology. You can study rocks. You're not just saying words about rocks. You can actually do it. But other things, especially in the higher levels of science, it really is just words about it. We think we're getting it, but we haven't gotten there yet. And so I think theology is an interesting way of approaching ghost hunting, too, is that these are really words about ghosts. We haven't been able to capture one necessarily to interview one or to be able to. I mean, we can. Some people claim and have had conversations. I'm not discounting that, but I just mean it's not like we have some blueprint like they do in Beetlejuice, right? Of the book of the afterlife, the big book of the dead thing that he's always referring to. We don't have that yet. And until that, all we're doing is just talking about something, talking about our experiences and trying to understand what we see and what we feel.
Very much so. It's a belief language. And
that's great way to say it, belief language.
Yeah, and some people will use science to talk about their beliefs because that is what they consider to be more legitimate or more accepted. But some people will use maybe New Age language, or some people will use religious language. But ultimately, what we're doing is providing a belief language in the way we interpret our events, whereas a Muslim may say there's a jinn, and maybe someone in, you know, South Dakota will say, "Oh, it's Aunt Sylvia in the corner.
Right.
It's not a jinn."
Right.
And I think that's where ghost stories and our fascination with this really reveals so much about who we are and our personal identities. And that's because I have a cultural studies background. That's why I found this story of paranormal reality TV to be so fascinating, because regardless of how campy or woo-woo it may appear, what it is allowing the viewer every Wednesday or Friday or whatever to be an armchair participant in a very, very important dialogue about identity and faith and science and phenomenal experience and metaphysics. And there's no other reality TV programming that really provides this type of discussion.
Well, obviously you haven't seen Dance Moms on Lifetime, but I'll just leave that there for now. That's that you talk about the paranormal, but then there's that idea of the woo-woo, but then there's also the boots on the ground stuff that you are doing. And let's go back to the USS North Carolina. Can you tell the story about when you left your— didn't you leave a recorder? I'm trying to remember from earlier in the week. Didn't you leave a recorder on in a room, and then you left the room, and or you left your phone behind? And
yeah, it was the first time I ever met the TAPS guys, and I was so stupid. I left my gear behind, and Steve Gonzalez, bless his heart, you know, he recognized it as mine and came back up to the— he found me, you know, he found me. He could have gotten anyone to do it, but he came back up and found me where I was and gave me my stuff. But then I realized there was still one item left behind. And I went back down with an Haunted North Carolina member who is a good friend of mine now. And we retrieved my digital audio. And that's when I suddenly felt that cold spot that I spoke about just pass by me. And my friend Steve is a sensitive, and he says, "Oh, I'm nauseous." And that's when I said, "You know, I just felt this cold spot." And it coincided with my personal experience and him reacting to this energy moving through. And this was in the officers' quarters, and anyone who's ever investigated the ship knows this is an extremely active location. And I thought that was really cool. It justified to me that I was not crazy, that I was actually feeling something.
But the same night too, was it a woman who lost her son, the one that recorded the EVP?
That's right. My cousin Diana, she lost her son when he was 19, and she's always wondered, you know, is he okay? How are things going? And she recorded a couple of EVP that night, but she felt a cold spot as well, and she was commenting on it. And Jason Hawes happened to stand beside her, and Jason's like, "Well, it's just the pipes or whatever." And because he's a plumber, she assumed he knew a thing or two about pipes. But later, when she reviewed the audio at that point, when she's saying, "Oh, I feel a cold spot," you hear Jason go, "It's the pipes." And then this voice of a man pipes in who wasn't present. He says, "No, it's me, Harvey." And when she heard that voice, it, even though she's never obtained EVP from her son, it helped her realize that it is possible for people who have passed, in her mind, to communicate. And it gave her some peace. It gave her some peace that her son is probably okay, you know, wherever he is. And I think a lot of people who do this are trying to find some peace, that people they love are okay.
How clear is that audio?
If I remember correctly, it's pretty clear.
I'd like to hear that sometime. I really do. I mean, I think those EVP recordings are fascinating. Some of them are, at least in my experience, some of them are like you know, interpreting clouds going past. Some people see a bunny rabbit. Other people see a jar of peanut butter. But other times, I really have heard some EVPs that really make you think, okay, I'm not just hearing things. There's something there to hear.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I think when you get something like that, you can't discount it. I have a friend who's a university professor at a leading institution in the U.S. who does ghost hunting on the side. He's not real open about it with his colleagues. But I asked him once, you know, do you really believe in ghosts? I mean, this is a man who is, you know, at a very respected educational institution. And he said, you know, I don't know if we're dealing with ghosts, but I will say that the data we're obtaining is very intriguing. Something is going on. And I really like that way of explaining these things. Something is going on that we don't yet understand.
Well, and I think that's so much of what Coast to Coast has been about from the very beginning, is just try to understand what's going on. Sometimes understanding what's going on is talking about government. Sometimes understanding what's going on is talking about ghosts. Other times it's things in the night sky flying overhead, or that which is, you know, living in caves and or science or whatever. It's always about trying to understand about that which is going on. But I want to ask you then, coming up, how do you, either as a former Christian, now Muslim, how do you understand angels versus ghosts versus a demonic presence? How do you categorize these things? How do you see the world? If you had to write your cosmology, how does it all fit? And we'll talk about that coming up. It's all part of America's paranormal obsession, America's fascination with ghosts, hauntings, spooks, and spirits. Deanna Kelly Saeed continues next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.